Today is Wednesday, January 9th, 2019, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, the partial U.S. government shutdown continues as President Trump and congressional Democrats make their cases to the American people. As the war continues in Yemen, one of the greatest threats is starvation.
We found many malnutrition cases, but the sad thing is that whenever a kid is sent home healthy, they come back malnourished.
Also ahead, the latest gadgets and technology from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. It's all on today's International Edition. The partial U.S. government shutdown is in day 19. Tuesday night, President Trump took his case for a border wall directly to the American people in a primetime address. Congressional Democratic leaders Nancy Pelosi and Charles Schumer made their own argument against the wall and pushed for reopening the government in their response. Joining me with more on the two speeches and the latest on the shutdown is VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara. Patsy, thanks for being with us. First, let's begin with President Trump. He made his first address from the Oval Office last night. What did he say?
Well, the president tried to paint an imminent humanitarian and national security crisis at the border. That's number one. Number two is that he accused Democrats of refusing to solve it. And you're right, Jim, that this is his first Oval Office address. It bears with it the weight of the office of the president. We remember a recent one where President Obama announced the death of Osama bin Laden, for example. So using the Oval Office was meant to stress how much of a crisis this is, in particular to people outside his base. What was interesting to me was that even though the president mentioned a lot of crime at the border, but he did not push the narrative of terrorism or thousands of terrorists flocking at the border as administration officials have done in recent days and have been debunked. And he only also used the word shutdown once when he was blaming the Democrats for not working with him on border security. And he also mentioned the wall not at the beginning, but at the end of his list of asks, presenting it as a holistic approach in border security, which may offer room for compromise, as the term wall itself is so loaded and represents everything that the Trump base loves, but everything that the Democratic base hates.
Well, you mentioned that some of the facts have been debunked. The fact checkers certainly were hard at work following the speech. What are you hearing about whether the president helped or hurt his case last night?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. Some conservative commentators are saying that he seemed presidential. He was able to lay his case. Why aren't the Democrats working with him? While liberal outlets are saying there's nothing new here, there's no strategy. He's just continuing to bully his way in to get his demands. One commentator said that usually a president addresses to calm a frightened nation. In this case, it was to frighten a calm nation. So there's a lot of, you know, takes on the speech. I personally think that both the speeches from the president as well as the Democratic side have not moved the needle much in either direction. But we will see in the next couple of days whether people will be calling in their members of Congress to say, build the wall no matter what, or just end the shutdown and then discuss border security. This will be the pressure that moves the needle.
You mentioned the Democratic response. We haven't had a chance to discuss that yet. What did they say?
They said that this is another temper tantrum and we shouldn't govern with a temper tantrum. The crisis at the border is manufactured. And they're saying that they're happy to work on border security. Just don't hold the Americans hostage with this shutdown. So really their strategy is not focusing on the wall, but on the shutdown and how it has hurt Americans who are having difficulty getting their food stamps, Social Security, in the hopes that as the shutdown drags on, there will be more and more pressure for the White House and the Republicans to cave in.
We have about 30 seconds. Democratic leaders will be traveling to the White House later today to resume negotiations. Is there any reason to think a breakthrough is near?
Well, right now, both sides are still dug in, but if a compromise is to be reached, it will be about, or it may be about rhetoric or terminology. Stop talking about the wall. Start talking about border security. The problem is who is going to blink first and end the shutdown.
And we'll just have to stay tuned to see who that is. Our White House correspondent, Patsy Whitaker-Swara, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And this is VOA's International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the United Nations Refugee Agency has determined that an 18-year-old Saudi woman who fled to Thailand is a refugee and referred her case to Australia for possible resettlement. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is headed back home after a two-day visit to China and talks with President Xi Jinping. Authorities in Australia are investigating a number of suspicious packages that were sent to several foreign embassies and consulates in the capital, Canberra, and the southern city of Melbourne. And U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made an unannounced visit Wednesday to Iraq. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA reports its new planet-hunting spacecraft, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS, found its first three confirmed extrasolar planets within the first 3 months of operation. The first planet spotted by TESS is called Pi Mensi C, which is about twice Earth's size. The second is LHS 3884b, which NASA describes as a rocky planet that's about 1.3 times the size of Earth. And the third exoplanet imaged by TESS is called HD 21749b, which is about 3 times the size of Earth. Along with these three confirmed extrasolar planets, the space agency says TESS's sensitive cameras also imaged 6 exploding stars or supernovas. NASA also reports that citizen scientists analyzing data collected by TESS's predecessor, the Kepler spacecraft, also spotted a new exoplanet that's about twice the size of Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Joining me now here in the studio is VOA's Masoud Farivar, who has been covering the Robert Mueller investigation into possible Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. Masoud, thank you for joining us. Let's begin with today's breaking news, and that is Deputy U.S. Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who has overseen the Russian investigation for nearly 2 years. He's expected to leave his position soon. What will the impact be on the ongoing investigation?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, as you pointed out, Rod Rosenstein appointed Robert Mueller a couple of years ago and has been a big defender of the Russia investigation. And because of his oversight of the investigation, he has also often found himself at the receiving end of the president's anger and ire at the investigation. He almost lost his job over it, you know, last year, a few months ago. But with his departure, the president gets to pick someone whose views are more closely aligned with his and might be open to the idea of shutting down the investigation or at least narrow its scope. But, you know, there are political consequences to that, and that means that the issue of protecting the Russia investigation will be front and center when the president's new attorney general nominee, William Barr, appears before the Senate for his confirmation next week.
All right. Well, there have been a lot of things going on. Yesterday, in a court filing, it was revealed that Donald Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was sharing polling information from the campaign with an associate who has ties to Russian intelligence. Does this prove the Trump campaign may have tried to coordinate with Russians during the presidential race?
He wasn't only sharing polling information with the former associate. He was also discussing a peace plan for Ukraine that could potentially get U.S. sanctions lifted from Russia. I think it's clearly a significant piece of the puzzle that the special counsel has been trying to put together, but it's also easy to play up its significance in terms of establishing collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. It raises more questions than it answers. Was the polling data publicly available? Did Manafort want the data to be shared with the Russian government? And more importantly, was the president or then-candidate Donald Trump aware of what was going on, aware of Manafort's communications with Klimnik, the former associate? We don't know the answers to those questions.
Okay, well, we've got a lot to cover here. Robert Mueller's grand jury just had their time extended. Is this a sign more indictments are likely or a step towards wrapping up the investigation?
It's hard to say. I think it's a clear sign that the special counsel has a lot of unfinished business before he wraps up his investigation. Just yesterday, as you know, the Supreme Court ruled against a foreign corporation that has been fighting a subpoena that was issued by the grand jury. That means the special counsel is still using the grand jury to seek testimonies, documents from witnesses. More indictments are likely. Some of the people in the president's inner circle have indicated that they expect to be indicted. One of those people is Roger Stone, the presidential confidant.
Well, there's certainly going to be a lot to cover in 2019, and perhaps we'll even see a resolution of this investigation. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us. That's Masoud Farivar, who has been covering the investigation into Russian meddling into the 2016 elections.
Thanks.
And this is VOA's International Edition. Malta announced Wednesday that it will allow 49 migrants stranded on two German NGO vessels off its coasts to disembark on the island. The deal was reached after eight European Union nations agreed to take the migrants in their countries. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
The 49 migrants rescued by two German humanitarian vessels, the Sea Watch and Sea Eye, disembarked Wednesday using Maltese military patrol boats because the NGO ships have not been granted access to the port in La Valletta. For days, the migrants had been waiting to know what would happen to them. But the worsening weather conditions with strong winds and heavy seas helped reach a deal. Eight European Union countries finally agreed to take the migrants if Malta would allow them to disembark. Until Tuesday, the Maltese Prime Minister maintained that his island had already allowed the disembarkation of 249 migrants in late December and could not allow others to follow suit without an agreement for them as well. He got his way. Those migrants, too, will be redistributed in EU states, although a small number of them will stay in Malta. Some will also be returned to their country of origin, including 44 from Bangladesh. Prime Minister Muscat said every hour that went by without a solution was not something he was proud of. In the end, he said, a solution was found, but not by Europe. It was found by some of the member states. EU Migration Commissioner Dimitris Avramopoulos said that leaving the migrants at sea for so many days has not been an example of Europe's finest hour. He called for a much-needed reform of EU asylum rules, saying the bloc cannot count on disorganized ad hoc solutions. Currently, the asylum claims of migrants must be processed in the countries where they first arrive. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Trade talks between the U.S. and China were extended into a third day Wednesday. AP's Ed Giles reports.
Hopes rose for a U.S.-China breakthrough on trade on Wednesday. An American official told reporters the U.S. delegation had a, quote, good few days and talks were wrapping up. Wednesday was an unscheduled third day of talks, with China's foreign ministry saying the extra time showed they were very serious about negotiations. The extension also saw Asian stock markets jump up, with shares in the region hitting a 3.5-week high. Investors may be optimistic the US and China can avoid an all-out trade confrontation that has the potential to disrupt the global economy. Talks were stretched into a third day after signs of progress China could buy more US farm and energy commodities, and the US could get better access to Chinese markets. US President Donald Trump tweeted on Tuesday that the talks were going very well, but Reuters sources close to the talks said the two sides were further apart on the kinds of reforms the White House is demanding from China. Those would aim to stop the alleged theft of intellectual property and forced transfer of US technology, and determine how Beijing will be held to its promises. If there's no deal by March, Trump has said he will go ahead and raise tariffs to 25% from their current 10% on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports to the US. It's a move that could trigger retaliation from Beijing. It would also come at a time that recent data showed China's economy is slowing significantly. On Wednesday, the state-run China Daily said Beijing is keen to put an end to the trade dispute, but will not make any, quote, unreasonable concessions.
That's Reuters' Ed Giles reporting, and this is International Edition.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel. The war in Yemen has taken its toll far beyond what is reported in terms of military casualties. Guns and bombs are claiming lives, but hunger is another major threat to Yemenis. The World Food Program and the Food Agricultural Organization say 14 million people are on the brink of starvation. For VOA, Neha Wadekar reports from Aden in South Yemen.
Lina Ali Sanatsuha is 3 years old, but she's barely larger than a newborn. She and her mother fled fighting in Taiz 3 years ago and came to this informal displacement camp outside Aden.
First, she started vomiting. Then her sickness worsened.
Nadia Ahmed Ali works for the International Rescue Committee and helps malnourished children like Lina.
As a result of war, when Lina first was admitted, I was the one to receive her case. She had severe dehydration because of the conflict. Both the mother and kid didn't have proper nutrition, and this case continued because they are IDPs.
Relief workers say they're also battling the effects of poverty.
We found many malnutrition cases, but the sad thing is that whenever a kid is sent home healthy, they come back malnourished. That's all because of the bad economic situation of the families and also access to clean water issue here in this area playing a big role in their relapse.
Many displaced persons don't have access to clean water or money for food. Abdul Nasser Nasser runs a grocery store in the camp.
In terms of the people and their lives, prices now are very expensive. We are selling, but we cannot even control the prices.
Displaced persons continue to flood into Aden in search of food and assistance.
Al Sadaka Hospital in the port city of Aden is the only referral hospital in southern Yemen, which means that all complicated cases are sent here. The hospital already doesn't have enough medicine to treat its current caseload, and as the offensive in Hodeidah intensifies, doctors say it's only going to get worse.
If the hospital stops taking patients, it could mean death for children like 1.5-year-old Saba Mohammed, who has had pneumonia and is malnourished. Her mother and father, Mohammed Bahul Mohammed, fled Hodeidah and made it here in time to get Saba treatment.
What happened is that we didn't have a hospital equipped to treat our child. We suffered and became displaced. We went to Mocha, then to Aden. We are very tired. We hope things will get better for us.
Mohammed Ali of the World Food Program in Aden urges world donors to make Yemen a top priority.
I've been here almost a half years, and situation has been deteriorating rather than getting back to normal. And you will see that the demand also is getting higher, and with the closure of also Hodeidah port, that has played a significant role in terms of access of food to the people that are required.
The U.S. Senate has voted to end Washington's support to Saudi Arabia and the war, and UN-led peace talks in Sweden yielded a tentative ceasefire, new steps in a war that has pushed millions of Yemenis to the brink of starvation. Neha Wadekar for VOA News, Aden, Yemen.
And you're listening to VOA. A new global campaign aims to sensitize the world to the plight of refugees by urging people to step into their shoes and clock the number of kilometers they need to run to reach safety. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA at UN Refugee Headquarters in Geneva.
The campaign wants people to get out of their comfort zone and see what it feels like to be a refugee. It is calling on them to cover the distance traveled by refugees fleeing for their lives every year. The UN Refugee Agency estimates refugees travel 2 billion kilometers every year to reach the first point of safety. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balash tells VOA the campaign encourages people to run, walk, or cycle to achieve a similar cumulative total. He says participants can use their fitness apps or the campaign website to log the kilometers and contribute to a global total.
The whole idea is to bring back solidarity to the refugee cause. So this is a contribution, and also walking, running, cycling, they're all healthy activities. But refugees don't do it for fun. They do it when they have to leave or run away from a situation of danger.
Balash notes it takes a Syrian refugee 240 kilometers to reach Turkey. South Sudanese refugees, he says, have to travel more than 640 kilometers to reach Kenya. And Rohingya refugees in Myanmar have to cover about 80 kilometers to reach safety in Bangladesh. The UNHCR is calling on people in 27 countries across Africa, Asia, Central and North America, Europe, and the Middle East to take part in the campaign. It says participants can seek sponsorship to raise funds for the refugee cause. The agency says it hopes to raise more than $15 million. This will support registration and reception services for refugees, as well as providing food and water, shelter, and other basic aid. The UNHCR reports a record 68.5 million people are forcibly displaced worldwide, including 25.4 million refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
More than 4,000 exhibitors from 155 countries are in Las Vegas this week for the Consumer Electronics Show, one of the year's biggest gatherings for companies to show off their latest technology. VOA's Michelle Quinn got a look at some of the products making a splash.
Here at the Consumer Electronics Show, it seems that every activity can use a little help from technology.
And we are here at the CES to show a new product, which is the production for the bicycle.
More than 180,000 people are in town this week for the annual technology show. They come to see the latest from established big tech companies, but also from new ones. Hillite from France makes airbags with sensors as protection for risky activities.
Accelerometers, gyros, and then we have a microprocessor which is analyzing the motion of the cyclist. If I fall, the sensors will detect the fall and it will send a signal to the cartridge, which is located here, and the cartridge will inflate all the airbag, front, neck, and back.
Playing with the technology on the show floor is part of the fun. But some of the excitement at CES this year is about changes to come with the new speedy 5G mobile internet networks.
CES is actually a global platform for all technology products. You know, some of the key themes that we're seeing this year is things like 5G technology, which are going to enable so much faster communications for everything from healthcare to driverless car to AI.
In the meantime, robots show off. They can do some human work. And sensors packed into everyday objects promise to make life better.
It's using sensors and an app. 20 minutes before the wake-up time, it's going to warm up smoothly to help you wake up.
And augmented reality can let you see the world and yourself in a new light.
You can try on 30 shades in 30 seconds on the app.
At CES, while the star of the show is technology, human ingenuity is also on display. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Las Vegas.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can get more on all of today's news at voanews.com. My thanks to our studio team, Director Patrice Martin, Engineer Wagner Roberts, and I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for listening.